Remember when I first met you, my lips were so afraid to say I love you. Remember when to my surprise, the heaven in my heart leaped into your eyes. Remember how much I cried, tears of joy to think you were. Down deep inside, I still feel that feeling divine. I loved you then, and I still do. I can't remember when I I cried tears of joy to think you were mine. Darling, down deep inside, I still feel that feeling divine. I loved you then, and I still do. I can't remember when I didn't love you.
Remember.
Over the minds of mortal men come many shadows. Shadows of greed and hate, jealousy and fear. Shadows which fog the minds of men and women, which urge them on into their venture in the dark. Dark Venture. The American Broadcasting Company presents Dark Venture, written by Larry Marcus, directed by William T. Johnson, and featuring an all-star cast. And now, your host for tonight's journey into darkness, John Newland.
Tonight, the city has a fable to unfold for those who would follow us through the summer darkness. It is not quite 11 o'clock in the city. The street lamps are glowing targets for mosquitoes and moths. The endless miles of neon tubing slashing the darkness with garish reds and blues and greens. Traffic moves quickly down the street. The sidewalks are filled with sleepless citizens, fruitlessly searching for some wayward breeze. But here, where our story begins, here in this dark alley, there is only George, a skinny, scrawny bum, whose bed for tonight is a strip of cobblestone behind a row of trash. It would be interesting to wonder what the old bum dreams about as he sleeps in the alley, but there is no time, for now suddenly, George is no longer alone.
Get out, Joe.
Now listen.
Get out.
Listen to me. You got me all wrong.
Get out.
No, but wait, listen to me.
Start walking down the alley.
Hurry up, I'm begging you. Give me a break, Harry. I'm begging you. I'm begging you.
Dark Wolf.
Then Harry, listen to me.
Dark Alley. Maybe you can get away.
Harry, you mean you'll let me get away? You mean you'll tell the boss you couldn't help it, huh? Is that what you mean, Harry?
Never can tell.
Oh, Harry, I always said you were okay. I always knew it.
Go on, start down the alley.
Sure, Harry. And the boss will believe you, too, Harry. It's a dark alley.
Faster, Joe. Walk faster.
Yeah. Faster. So long, Harry. And thanks.
Run, Joe. Run.
Run. Yeah, run.
Joe falls and dies, almost at the scrawny bum's feet. The car races away, and now George, the bum, is alone in the alley with the dead man.
Gotta get out of here. Can't be found with this guy. They might blame me. Gotta get out. Gotta get out. Hey, but wait. Use your head, George. Look at the clothes this guy's wearing. Even in the dark, you can see how classy they are. Yeah, he's really got a roll in his wallet, and he don't need it anymore. Now, hurry. Can't we save time? Here. Here's his wallet.
Hey, those cops! I think they came from this alley. Come on!
Cops! Gotta get out of here.
But as George turns to run, the wallet drops from his nervous fingers.
No!
The money scatters across the cobblestones. He has no time to look for it in the dark. The police are already coming up the alley. He grabs the first bill his fingers touch and then starts running. George doesn't stop running till half a dozen blocks separate him from the alley and the dead man and the police. Now, finally, he slows down to a walk where the people on the street are staring at him. Fearful that they might wonder what he clutches so tightly in his fist, he steps into a doorway, opens his hand. By the dim hallway light, he looks.
A $10 bill. Now, I'll bet there was 50 of them in that wallet, and all I got was one. Well, no use crying about it now. Anyway, there's still a lot of things a guy can do with a $10 bill.
A $10 bill. But this is a very special $10 bill. And you are not to lose sight of it for an instant. For in a sense, you might say, the hero of our journey into darkness tonight is this $10 bill. Now George folds the bill into a pocket, heads across Fifth Avenue to Charlie's Tavern. Not many in Charlie's place tonight, the usual crowd. Everybody's edgy, it's hot. It's too hot tonight to get much of a kick out of seeing old George mosey in.
Hiya, fellas. Hot night, isn't it?
Oh, that's
and here's Charlie, the best darn bartender that ever scraped a head off a glass of cold beer.
I don't think none of the boys is in the mood to set you up tonight, George. Why don't you, Peter?
Just a minute now. How many times would you say I mooch drinks off you fellas, huh?
Too many.
Yeah, too many times, but I always give you a laugh, didn't I? Old George always give you a laugh for setting him up.
George, huh? Go on, Peter.
All old George had to do was say, "This is a fine end for a fella who studied business administration at Princeton University." And then you all had a good laugh at old George. Well, tonight's going to be different.
Look, will you scram out of here?
Tonight, old George is going to set him up for you boys. Every one of you. $10 worth. And this time, when he tells you about Princeton, this time, you're not going to laugh at all. Set him up, Charlie. Anything they want, $10 worth.
That's all that does it. Get out of here.
Well, what are you talking about? I told you to set him up.
And I told you to get out, you drunken bum.
Huh?
What are you trying to pull $10 worth? Out.
I got to.
Get out.
No, hey.
Out.
So before George can pull the $10 bill out of his pocket, he finds himself sitting on the sidewalk. And through the screen door come the laughs and taunts of those inside. He picks himself up, shakes his head, starts shuffling down the street.
Old drunken bum. Laughing at me like that. Not even giving me a chance to show him my money. What do they think they are? Old drunken bums.
And suddenly George stops. He is looking into a store window where orange-faced dummies gracefully display the very latest fashion in second-hand clothing. But George is not looking at the dummies or the clothing. He is watching his own reflection, his torn, faded shirt, his baggy pants, patched, food-stained and greasy.
Old bum. Old bum.
You interested in some nice garments, mister? I seen you standing there looking at the display.
Oh.
Why don't you come inside and look around?
Don't hurt to look.
But I can't.
Oh, you can't buy. You can't buy. Look, between me and you, I ain't had a customer inside the store for so long, even a guy just looking would be a relief.
Well, all right.
sit by myself. All I do is think.
What do I think about? How the lousy business has ruined my nerves. How I treat my wife, Eva. It's like she was a dog.
Well, maybe I do want to buy. I mean, I could use some clothes, I guess, and I got a little money.
How little?
$10.
A little money? Mister, for $10 you could get dressed from head to bottom and maybe have a couple of bucks left.
What?
I got good values. Only today who buys second-hand clothes. Here, take a look at this suit. Feel the material. 60% wool, wears like that.
And in a very short time, George the old bum finds himself in the washroom behind the store, changing into his new second-hand clothes. Then he finds a razor on the sink. He shaves himself, combs back his hair. After that, he walks out.
Say, hey, that looks more like it. Look at yourself in the mirror.
Well, yeah, looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Pretty good, terrific. You really look like something.
Well, you know, I wasn't always a bum. Once I was headed for big things. I even studied business administration at Princeton University.
Yeah? Say, that's a pretty good college.
You believe me?
Why shouldn't I believe you? You look like a man who has a head for that stuff.
I got sidetracked, that's all. A lot of bad luck, and then everything went to pieces.
So what? The guy can bounce back. Look, I bet you could go out tomorrow. If you told people about this Princeton deal, I'll bet you could name your own job.
You really think so?
Sam Bernstein never says anything you don't think. Life's too short. It'll be $8 even.
Yeah, here's a $10 bill.
Hey, yeah? Your change.
You wouldn't know of any fairly good hotel around here, would you?
Well, yes, certainly. It's a place down the street where you get a room for a buck and a half. So it's not fancy, but it's clean.
Fine. I want to get a good night's sleep. I got a lot of things to do tomorrow. Good night.
Oh, say, mister, wait a second.
Yes?
What do you want me to do with your clothes?
Do anything you want. What would I have use for them? Those clothes are only good for an old bum.
And George leaves the second-hand store and disappears into the night. Maybe tomorrow night he'll sell his new clothes for a pint of gin. Then again, let's hope he won't. It's almost 11:30 when Sam closes the store. He walks down the street toward the bus stop. The $10 bill is in his pocket with the other money. The bus is late, and he waits in the doorway of the Pearson Flower Shop. Mr. Pearson is closing up and is taking the flowers out of the window. Sam watches him and remembers how long it has been since he brought Eva, his wife, anything. Before he knows it, he's going inside the shop.
Hell, hello. I just got a minute before I catch my bus. I thought maybe I'd like to buy their little flower.
I'm sorry, but I'm closed for the night.
Yeah, but look, I want to bring my wife home a little something, you know, and I...
Why don't you come back tomorrow?
I don't want it tomorrow. I want it now.
I'm sorry.
So look, buddy, that flower there on the desk. Now, what does it take to put in a little box? Give it to me. How about it, huh?
That's an orchid.
Orchid?
Yes, it's pretty expensive. $6.
$6 for one flower?
Yeah.
Okay, wrap it up. Give it to me.
Well, all right, I suppose I can. Will this box be all right?
Sure. You don't even have to tie it. Here, it's $10.
Oh, don't you have anything smaller?
No.
Well, I put all the money in the safe. I've only got $1.
Hey, look, that's my bus coming down the street. I got my own store block away. Just give me the dollar. I'll pick up the rest tomorrow.
All right. If that's all right with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, sure. Come in here with a $10 bill, and all I got to show for it is $1 and a flower. I don't know. I guess maybe it's
fluff.
And now the florist has the $10 bill. He folds it into a tiny square and stuffs it into his watch pocket. He yawns and finishes putting the flowers into the icebox, and by 10 to 12, he's finished. He washes up and back, straightens his tie, turns out the lights, and starts for the front of the store. In the darkness, someone is waiting for him.
Who is it?
Never mind. Just stay where you are. I'm not kidding with this gun.
Gun?
Yeah. Yeah, just hand over the dough, mister.
Money's in the safe.
Then open the safe.
I can't. It's automatic. It can only be opened by...
Look, maybe you think I'm kidding with this gun. Maybe you think I won't use it if I have to.
Take it easy. I told you the safe is...
Never mind your safe. Give me what you got on you.
I haven't got a penny on
Look, wise guy. I'm telling you. I'm going to kill you. Maybe you think I ain't got the guts. Maybe that's what you think.
No, I...
Hand over your dough.
I told you. I don't have a penny.
Okay, I'm going to show you.
Wait. Yeah, I forgot. I do have some money. $10.
Hand it over quick.
It's in my watch pocket. Here it is.
Okay, mister. That's better. Maybe I ought to let you kiss this dough before I take it. It just saved your life.
So now our $10 bill is in the hands of a young thief, running now down a dark side street. His face plastered with sweat, his heart beating wildly against his ribs.
I knew I could do it.
Even in the darkness, it's easy to see his youthfulness. The slender, undeveloped shoulders, the smooth, unshaven face, the kid mouth sagged open, gasping in air as he runs.
Not so bad for my first job. Or was that guy scared? Oh, man, was he scared.
What is not apparent in the darkness are the years that brought the boy to this street on this night with a gun in his pocket and a stolen $10 bill. The poverty, the loneliness, the many hungers. Now the boy slows down, standing under a street lamp. Puts the $10 bill into his wallet. At this moment, a little man in a doorway, biting a toothpick, smiles and glides out of the shadows.
Hey, buddy.
Huh? What do you want?
Hey, buddy, you wouldn't mind any chance me having a match for my cigarette now, would you?
Oh, yeah. Here's a pack. Keep it.
Oh, thank you very kindly. But John Forrest is not a man to keep what ain't his under no circumstances. No, sir, so I'll just strike one of your fine matches. Light my cigarette and deposit the book of matches right in the same pocket that you took them out of.
Hey.
And now, begging your pardon, sir, I will proceed on my way. Good night and thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, beat it.
The young thief continues down the dark street, not quite sure where he's going, but glorying in his newfound courage. Then just ahead, he sees a pair of headlights coming his way.
The cops! Gotta get out of here! Get rid of the gun!
Turn around, shoot!
Okay! What do you want from me? I didn't do nothing.
Just staying still.
What are you doing that for? I don't carry no gun, if that's what you're looking for.
Come on over to the squad car with me.
Sure. The only reason I ran, I got kind of rattled, so...
Yeah. All right, Mr. Pearson. Take a good look at him. Is he the one I held you up?
I don't know. Like I said, I didn't see much of his face in the dark.
How about his voice?
The fellow who held me up was pretty excited. I don't know.
Well, he's not carrying a gun. I don't know any other way.
Oh, wait.
Yeah?
Look at his wallet. See if he has a $10 bill.
Oh, hey, now.
What would that prove?
Well, if he doesn't have a 10 spot, at least it proves he isn't the one. If he does, well, I don't know. He might be.
Let me see what kind of money you're carrying, son.
No. You ain't got no right to search.
Okay, I'll find it myself. Stand still.
Hey, you.
All right. Well, this isn't our man. He don't have a dime on him.
Did you look in his wallet?
He doesn't have a wallet. Oh. Go on, buddy. Beat it. This is one time when it's lucky not to have a $10 bill.
Mm-hmm. Two blocks away, a spindly-legged little man, still smiling, throws away an empty wallet and pockets our $10 bill.
Yeah, punk kid. He really thought I was drunk. I could have picked his pocket with my teeth.
The little man walks through the night humming to himself, his eyes darting up and down the dark streets, till suddenly he stops, like a man who suddenly beholds an image of unbelievable loveliness.
Hey, a liquor store. Open this late? It's locked. But all the lights are on. And there's a fellow working inside. Hey, open up, young fella. Open up. No, I ain't gonna go away. Open up.
Don't you believe a locked door when you see it? We're closed.
What, with all the lights burning and you in your shirt sleeves?
I'm taking inventory, that's all. Come back tomorrow.
Oh, no, wait. Tomorrow, that's a poor word. What is tomorrow but a great big question, Mark?
Yeah, okay, good night.
No, wait a minute.
Take your foot out of the door.
Oh, man, can't you see? I'm ready to drop. Just for a little teeny bottle or something or other, huh?
Sorry.
But I got money. Look, a $10 bill.
It's after 3 in the morning. I can't sell you anything. Didn't you ever hear about the law?
Law. That's another word that don't bring no joy to my heart.
Look, pal, I only work here. I'm tired. I want to go home.
Yeah, look, hey, that bottle of bourbon standing over there.
Yeah?
You could just reach back and grab it without even stretching your little finger.
Now, look, I told you, didn't I?
It's marked $6 plus tax, right? Now, I'll just give you this $10 bill for it, and I won't even complain a bit. In fact, I'll be the happiest guy in the world.
Pal, you picked the right man. You know, I guess it's like they say. Takes the heel to know a heel. Hand over the tent.
So by 3:20, our $10 bill is owned by a clerk in a liquor store, a clerk named Eddie. And by 3:45, Eddie's locking the store, starting his walk across town to his rented room in 4th Street. But at this time of night, Eddie doesn't mind that walk so much. In the darkness, Eddie can relax. Even drop the scowl that's his defense against whatever life might do to him. Eddie's never had much faith in life, and what little he had, he lost in the mud before casino. Now Eddie's out to get whatever he can, any way he can. He's thinking about that now as he reaches the bridge that spans the North River. Then he sees the girl standing near the middle of the bridge, looking down.
Dang, what's she doing here? Maybe she's lonely. Maybe I'll say hello. Hey, what's she trying to do?
Hey, lady, don't do that. Get off that ledge.
Get off that ledge.
Leave me alone. Call me.
Take care of
you. Call me. You're not going to stop me.
Yeah, I am going to stop you. Come on now, relax. I'll slug you right on that chin.
Why don't you leave me alone? None of your business, aren't you?
Hey, take it easy. I think that's a trial car coming across the bridge. I threw you in the can for trying something like this.
Oh, no.
Here, think like we just stopped to light a cigarette here. It's a prowl car, all right. Okay, it's past.
You're not going to stop me. Nobody's going to stop me. As soon as you leave, I'm going to do it anyway.
That's your business.
That's right.
Only I don't know why a good-looking dame like you wants to do something like this. You know, if you weren't so skinny, you'd really be something to write home about. What's the trouble?
Go on. Beat it.
Sure, I'll beat it. You can jump nice as you please. Only I got a nice long way to walk till I get to my room, and I always like to have something to think about while I walk, so you tell me why a swell-looking dame like you has to kill herself, and I'll think about that.
Yeah. If I tell you, maybe you'll even help me, since I'm such a swell-looking dame.
Sure. You can't tell.
Everybody's always willing to help a swell-looking dame. And all they want in return is maybe a little gratitude.
Well, after all, it's only humor.
Yeah, sure. Go on. Leave me alone.
Now you got me really interested. That'd be like leaving a good movie right before the best part.
Oh, please, leave me alone.
You tell me, and then I'll go. Look, it won't be so bad. We can finish these cigarettes. It's a nice night. Besides, what does a couple of minutes mean to you? One way or the other.
Okay, Mr. Big Shot. Yeah, I'll tell you fast and sweet. And all I need is a couple violins playing softly in the background. Which version do you want? Annie, the sewing machine girl, or little Nell making paper flowers in her dark bedroom? Or maybe you want to hear about Helen. That's me. The big blonde who was going to come to the city and set it on fire, sing and dance and act and you name it. It's right up Helen's alley. Maybe you want to hear about her. I mean, she found out that setting the city on fire wasn't such a lead pipe cinch after all. Not when the city was nothing but cold steel. Am I holding your interest?
Yeah, go on. You're doing fine.
Oh, it gets better as it goes along. Maybe you want to follow our Helen through all the neon dives she worked in. Maybe you'd like to see her.
And the girl tells Eddie everything. And she's right. There should have been violins playing in the background, because it's really a very trite little story about a pretty blonde kid getting no place fast, about the late hours, the stale cigarette smoke, the sandwiches grabbed on the run finally taking their toll. Yep, and like all trite little stories, there's even a doctor in it. And he says what the doctor in the story always says, mild TB, but it'll kill you if you don't get away. And of course, there's a sister in Arizona who'll put her up till she gets well, if she'll only grab a bus and come right out. And all that stands in the way is $37. But in 3 months of trying, she hasn't been able to make it. When she passed the bridge, she wasn't thinking about suicide, but then suddenly she was very tired. And jumping into the water seemed the only sensible thing in this world to do. Finally, the girl finishes. The two stand in the dark for a very long time.
Well,
I don't believe any of it.
Hey, now.
I think you're a cheap little shill trying to talk me out of some dough.
Good for you. Now you can be on your way. Good night.
Wait. I'm not finished.
Yeah.
Sure, that's what I believe. Then, I'm a guy that's all twisted up like a pretzel. And because I believe it, that doesn't have to make it so. How much dough do you need?
Oh, now, listen.
Look, girlie, get it fast before I start thinking about it. How much dough do you need? How much dough?
I can get a bus out of here in just 2 hours. It'll take me all the way for $37. That's with meals. Me, I got about $6.
You need 31 more.
Yeah.
This is your lucky night. Usually I wouldn't have that much with me, but a guy slipped me an extra 10. Come on. You said the bus leaves in 2 hours. We got to be getting down to the station.
At 6 a.m., a sleepy little crowd is gathered around the door of a bus marked Phoenix. The girl is the last to get on.
Well, I guess I'd better get my seat, Eddie.
Yeah. Good night, kiddo.
I don't know what to say except thank you.
Oh, it's okay. Me and Rockefeller, you know. Oh, go on. You better get on the bus.
Yeah.
I'll be going. So long.
So long.
Hey, Helen, wait a minute. Don't get on the bus yet.
Is it, Eddie?
You know, I'm always thinking someday I might go out to the West Coast.
Yeah?
All aboard, baby!
Just a second. Eddie, you were saying...
And if I do, well, I gotta go through Phoenix. And maybe if you give me your sister's address, maybe I'll look you up.
Come on,
Eddie, just look in the phone book. It's listed under Amelia Benson.
Amelia Benson.
Yeah, Amelia Benson. She's the only one in the book.
Baby, come on.
That is if you want me to look you up.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do want you to look me up. I do, Eddie. I do.
And so it is dawn in the city. And as the sky lightens, an old man in a hotel room on 4th Street has just awakened and is carefully putting on his new suit. In a flat on Harrison Street, an orchid rests, still fresh, in an icebox put there by a grateful wife. Across town, in a Wentworth Street studio, a florist stirs in his sleep, as if suddenly reliving his moments with the gunman in the dark and the $10 bill that saved his life. In a small bedroom near Logan Square, a young kid is thinking about that $10 bill, too. and wondering how he could have lost it, but thankful that he did, because losing it has given him another chance. In a store doorway on 12th Street, the pickpocket is sleeping off a drunk, dreaming of a happy world he's never known. Down 6th Street, Eddie is walking toward his room, whistling to himself and wondering if maybe by next month he'll be able to buy his bus ticket for Arizona. And on the outskirts of the city, in a fast-moving bus, a girl looks out the window. She sees a reflection in the glass and realizes that for a very long time, she's been smiling. Only at the ticket window of the bus company is there any real unhappiness as the cashier shakes his head and yells to his assistant.
Hey, Frank, where'd you get this bill?
Huh? I don't know. Why?
Counterfeit, that's why.
Huh?
Yeah, as phony as they come.
What are you going to do with it?
What can you do with it? I guess there's nothing in the world as worthless as a phony $10 bill.
Moral? Oh, I kind of think you've already figured out the moral for tonight's story. And I guess it goes something like this. In this life, nothing is ever counterfeit that brings people happiness. Of course, that doesn't mean you should go right out and start printing $10 bills. Good night, folks. See you next week. Listen next week for another Dark Venture with John Newland. Starring in tonight's story were Jack Moyles as Harry, Jack Edwards Jr. as Joe, Norman Field was George, the old bum, David Ellis was Eddie, Sam Edwards was the thief, Wilms Herbert as Mr. Pearson, the florist, Eddie Marr was Sam, Herb Vigran the pickpocket, and Virginia Gregg as the girl. Original music by Rex Corey. George Fenneman speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.